kitchen. This modified kitchen could be available like for microwaving something, but not for full-blown meals, was my understanding.
Yeah, like a
So.
barista service kitchen that was more like for a light duty service, like a coffee house, I think was.
Yes, so. Okay, so I.
So, Elaine, are you wanting it to specify commercial kitchen?
I think it just needs to be more that you guys can decide how much. Just as it will not be provided, but there is a kitchen.
Well, maybe you just say something to the extent that it's not a commercial kitchen.
Not a full commercial kitchen.
Not a full kitchen.
And then on the next page, will the existing well be capped and rebuilt? The well is going to remain. The well structure will remain, but it's going to be closed off, right?
Yes. That's what I understood.
And you know, I'm not sure I have a complete understanding of what their plan was. I mean, it had to stay because it has
They
function.
the city uses it for sampling.
It's also part of the historic site. It's an element from the commissary site. And so they're the well, my understanding is that they're going to recreate what they're talking about here for rebuilt is the wood structure that would have the crank bucket. So that's what they were discussing. And I remember the visual references.
So the wood,
But,
I just put that, just
that the structure will be
well,
in
it's in the
place.
plans. Yeah, it shows the,
Yeah.
they showed the visual of the rebuild of the well structure.
The well structure will be rebuilt. You got that. It's a
Yeah.
simple word. Thank you, Elaine. It's good.
And then
Good
about the
detail.
brick pavers, 3-inch concrete pavers with 6-inch spacers or with 1/4-inch spacers. 3-inch pavers.
Where are you? Have you moved
Second
on page
page. No,
two?
it's on the, yes, it's on the second page. Another question about the room.
Oh. Well, we.
Was there a sample? Did they give a sample?
No, but we discussed the bricks, and part of the motion was that the bricks were not of a like did not look patinaed or aged, and that they were using a temporary spacers instead of being laid side by side. So the amendment was the recommendation was that they use an older style brick and not using contemporary spacers.
Did, was there a sample of this of the papers
No
in the
sample.
plans?
No, there was like a visual and a discussion, and there was a drawing or something that indicated the spacing, or maybe a photo reference
Okay.
to the materials. I can't remember exactly.
But Briggs, you also wanted them to be rounded,
Yeah,
the
it might be
edges.
on like an aged or a tumbled brick, something that looked more patina than a cut edge brick.
Yeah. And I think they agreed on that.
It's reflected later in the minutes.
In the
In the
recommendations.
recommendations, yeah. Thank you.
Well, the discussion of parking, I think, is a little too, but I think the motion's correct.
Do I need to make an amendment to the motion accepting the minutes with the changes discussed?
Do that.
Okay.
Is there something else? Maybe a sound.
Oh, excuse me.
Hang on. And then the next part, Donaldson House. Something that's been already clarified since this meeting. No, I think the motion's okay.
Okay, so
okay.
Yes, would you make an addendum to your motion?
I move that we accept the minutes from the previous board meeting with the notations stated in the discussion.
Thank you. You're a second?
I second it.
All those in favor, Rich?
Yes.
Yeah, Margo?
Yes.
Thank you, David.
Motion passes.
Okay. And then our topic for this evening is really the design review guidelines. And Briggs and Elaine have spent
our lives.
they've spent their lives looking at this. So I am looking forward to hearing about it and moving forward with
it. Okay. Did everybody have a chance to look at it, first of all?
Yes.
David, no.
I haven't looked at it since your first. I think I looked at the first one, but not the second one, not the one that was attached here.
Well, then, I don't know how far we can go because it is 14 pages. Some of that is removal of information, but a lot of it is. And I didn't really intend for this to be an action tonight, just to a discussion. So, sorry,
I have a question. What are the highlighted yellow paragraphs? Why are they in yellow?
Well, let's start at the beginning.
All right.
What I did with the first draft was to go through the original design guidelines from 2004 and add quite a bit of history and context about the history of the area and also the history of the historic district and the county historic district and the city historic zone and how they became the current city district. And then those are on the first several pages if you have the document.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want me to display this? Would that be helpful?
Yeah, it'd be helpful.
Or I can send it to you.
You can send it to me and I can share it too. We could do it really well.
Why don't you give me permission? Oh, I'm not even locked out. I'll just send it to you.
Okay.
Do you want me to forward it right now since you're already locked in?
It is open.
Okay. Can you want to share?
I can make you a couple of
those. Oh, because I'm on Zoom. Sure.
Yeah. Okay. You should be able to.
Although I do bounce around on my screen regularly,
are we looking at the PowerPoint? I'm sorry, the PDF or the Word document?
They're the same. Word. The document you should be looking at is draft 2. The first page says, for Lowell Historic Preservation Zone Design Review Guidelines, Draft 2. So Briggs has it displaying now. So what we did, first of all, was we separated those two big sections into the history of Fort Lowell, which is about four paragraphs. Scroll them through that. And it's all stuff that is well known, well documented, no surprises. Some of it comes from the previous version of the design guidelines, and some of it is in the technical standard. And then we talked about the history of the preservation zone, the fact that there were two districts. One was a Pima County district, the second was a city zone. And those were combined in 1992 when there was an annexation. And all of the information from the annex, all of the information from the county zone was moved into the city code. 1992, there was the annexation. 1995, there was an updated survey. And so we talked a bit about the existing 30. Somebody asked if we could get a map of those 30 historic properties. And they are listed in the technical standard, which just needs creating a map. if somebody needs a map. The 70 residences that are constructed after 1980 in the subdivisions are contributing non-historic. So they were, those were designed with the review of the historic district or the historic zone board. 2002, the city purchased the commissary. In 2004, they purchased the Adkins parcel. And the Adkins parcel was surveyed as part of the master plan in 2009. So in 2007, those parcels were included in the historic inventory. Whether they were, I don't think they were ever actually put on the National Register. So one of the city questions was, are all these properties in the National Register? No. Some of them are and some of them aren't.
Okay.
And that's always been a confusion that we hope to rectify in the next year.
So are the so it's the 30 that are a part of the National Register and 70 residences that were not?
No.
No, it's not even that way.
There are not 30 in the National Register.
Okay.
It's the only ones in the National Register are the ones associated with the fort.
Okay.
The fort per se.
Okay.
I believe our two properties are as well.
Individually.
Yeah. Oh, you mean as part of the district.
Yeah. What is the...
Before I start saying.
What was there a question?
Yeah, I'm just curious. Where is the Hardy site?
The Hardy site is a big archaeological site that starts over in Pantana Wash and extends all the way to almost to the valley.
And there's an interpretive display at Fort Will Park of a Hohoka pit house.
Yeah.
But the map, actually, what in one of the books that's referenced, the Hardy site is on one of the maps. I can show you what they understand. Okay, so that's what I also did, Dan, which I should have sent you, is I went through all your questions, all the city's questions, and answered. Either we changed what we had drafted, or they're still to be decided, or to be discussed.
Yeah, great. If you could share both the second draft and that with us, that'd be not great.
Yeah, most of it was pretty straightforward. I mean, you just had to change some of the language because it was a little too restrictive. So the next section, applicability, and some of this, as I said last time, came from the West University guidelines. And just in the way they developed the guidelines. And then again, got rearranged some. Let's scroll down a bit.
So the purpose, that line that's in blue, what is that? Prior to the submission of a proposal, the applicant should or could consult with the HPZ board?
We're just highlighting the recommendation to come be in dialogue before going into your design process.
Okay.
At the top of the process.
Okay. So the blue is an additional statement from the first.
Right.
Yeah. One. Okay.
Applicability, all properties, signs, structures require review.
So a quick comment related to the prior to submission of it may be something like is encouraged to do so versus should might be a little more kind of in line with requirements and not being seen as potential requirements. But that's just a suggestion.
They should definitely refer to the Interior Secretary standards.
That is very true.
Yeah.
That is
it's recommended to me.
Recommended to
meet
with the board. And then, yeah, like that's good.
Okay.
So is encouraged to consult and should refer to, does that mean it?
Yeah,
is that what you just said?
Okay.
I don't have a live document to make notes on here for the folks online, but they're making notes on their printouts.
For the city's information, we took out most of the numeric references that were in here, because I don't know if they're the same, different. There's also some specific directions that are related to the code. If these are guidelines, I'm figuring that the applicant is going to work with the city to figure out which of those actual code references apply to them.
Well, and I will say that, like, the land use code referenced Article 2 was from a code that was basically it was adopted prior to 2013, and we adopted it. So the reference changes. I mean, so I think it's better to just do it.
I think that these will perpetuate longer than some of the code changes.
Yes.
So exactly. That's why I just left it.
No, and then, makes sense.
And then also just to put in the link there that if you need this information, go to the link. Mm-hmm. Look it up. We're going to scroll down from there. The other thing we did was we put in some definitions. What's meant by development? What's meant by structure? And some of this is for our own benefit, just to remind ourselves, you know, when things apply, what do we look at?
Right. Keep moving down.
And then the thing about full or minor review, one of the recommendations was to not say that minor review is a fast track, because it's not, it's a different, kind of a different process.
So I actually had I guess we're not quite to the part where we break down between which go minor and which go major.
It goes to the next section.
Okay. Sorry.
And then in this part two, this review of demolition, there was discussion about demolition, and it's just too complicated to put in the guidelines. I think that all the rules around demolition and whether a structure is contributing or non-contributing according to the HPZ or the PRS and the director and all of that, all of those layers, mm-hmm. I think if something needs to be demolished, they need to go back to the city and talk to the city about demolition.
Okay, so this would just basically guide them to come to us.
You agree?
Yeah, this is really about supporting people in development. I'm in agreement with Lane on this one for sure.
How does something, let's say the next owner of the Post Trader store, after Don and Nancy sell it 30 years or whatever, decides they want to demolish the West Bank. How would that be prevented, you know, from a historical preservation standpoint?
My understanding is it still has to go through the historic board and processes. That would never happen because that particular property has more protections from my...
No, I'm just saying as an example.
The city process still provides for them to come through this board, but this document is not... Its main job is not to convey the processes. It's really to get to these design guidelines. In my opinion, the processes actually are all coming from the code and the technical standards.
Or I'll give you a different example. When Margo wanted to demo her pool, the question was, is it a contributing structure? Right. And if it is a contributing structure, then you have to go through the process. You have to go through the review process. You also have to go to the mayor. So was that pool built in the 70s as a contributing structure? They decided no. And it wasn't, it was really the city and I think they consult also with PRS. And it's just simply an email. Is this a contributing structure? Is my shed a contributing structure? No.
So I guess how the guidelines is sort of the first stop for somebody who's planning an alteration, right? And so I think we need some language in there just to say that, you know, demolition will need to be reviewed, however.
What's the follow-up for?
Well, it's addressed, there's a little more detail in the number section. So
that's what I was hoping, because I'm in agreement that it's still not clear on our role.
Maybe we can put together some suggestions. Shall I keep scrolling that
process? Steps for review. So again, we point them back to the city for the application process because that can change, right?
Mm-hmm. Here's that highly recommended language again.
Right. And then just very generally, you know, that's another definition structure. How often do definitions change in the code like that?
I mean, it depends on what they are, but a definition for structure has been that way for a long time. If you go back and look at the land use code, it was the same as the land use code.
Yeah. And I have one about courtesy review, if we can go back to that. The courtesy review of plans and concepts is recommended before the formal review. However, my understanding, a courtesy review that happened in this meeting, they have had to submit to the city their plans. Is that true?
I mean, that's I believe that's what I've seen that they've done is they've submitted, they usually get a yeah.
But instead, my neighbor next door wants to come for a courtesy review before she goes to that step. She knows she's going to get rejected. She's coming here looking for, what does she need to include, because she doesn't know. And so that courtesy review language doesn't sound like a courtesy review. It just sounds like another review before the process starts, when in fact, this is somebody who wants it before they even submit to the city. And there's no way for them to come to this board for that review under these, unless you've got it someplace else that I don't know, but they don't have another place for it. And this is, I mean, one of us or two of us can do it, but it would better as a group.
Maybe we should just add something like the board is always available as a resource to neighbors at any stage of the planning, or something that's very broad and open like that.
But then you'd have to put it on the agenda. And that's the part that we were refused. They couldn't get on the agenda because they didn't have an application
And, I
and
mean,
didn't have an application.
I'm still not even clear on how the courtesy review process works.
I think basically what happens is, and we can come in and clarify exactly how we do this, but really they would submit through our at our gov system or TDEC online, and we do that just so the documents are public, so we make sure that goes through that, and then at that point that's when we set up the courtesy. So we really require someone just to come in and submit those documents, and I mean, we do like an application completeness just to make sure there's enough information for you to like have something to review, but it doesn't require a full application to do
Do
so.
they have to, don't permits, don't they start when they make that application? Is that when their, like, the permit date starts? So I pay $250 to the city to get my submission
So we don't charge any money
for
for
this.
the courtesy review or anything of that sort.
Okay.
They would just have, they really, and you don't even necessarily have to have a permit in or anything of that sort. You could go through and do a special districts application for an HPZ or something, and it could do a historic review. So you don't even have to have that.
How detailed does the plan need to be submitted to the state?
I mean,
Something somebody could say, I'm planning to build a garage,
yeah,
and
I can come back and
submitting
clarify
that.
you on what how we do
Okay.
that,
Yeah.
Are you good
as far as
on
how detailed it is.
Yeah, I guess what you're getting at is you want to be available as a resource, but that it's not, even in some instances, it makes sense for neighbors before they're starting their design process to be coming to get that guidance, because they're about to invest a great deal of money into paying professional designers and making sure that they're going in the right direction as they take that on. And were you saying that it was hard to have that agendized in order to?
Yeah,
I think part of it's probably,
but I mean, I was told that you can't put it on unless, I don't know who I spoke to, maybe Michael, I don't know. But unless they had submitted to the city, and they had a picture of their house, and here's what they were thinking to
They
do,
just wanted to come in and
and
discuss
they
it.
just wanted to come in and just, which is a real legitimate starting place with some of our historic homes, that because
Do other
Yeah,
boards
you want to get
do
an
this?
understanding of that, right? I mean, I've seen courtesy reviews with all the different boards.
Okay.
But again, I think we do require them to submit through our system and have a level of detail. I can clarify
Okay.
what that is
Okay.
for you guys, and then
That's good. So we'll make that an agenda item for next time.
Just as a note too, it'd be good to have language that reflects whatever that process is here, right? So that we, as people are going through this, they can say, oh, man, I need a courtesy review. I still need to submit. It's not, because if they're reading this through and looking at the website, I still was lost, so how does this process work?
That's great.
Of course, yeah, no, we We want to make sure people understand what that process is. So any way that we can improve that. No,
Well, definitely supporting people at the onset before they pay for design services is important, because that's where the anger comes from, when they've paid for design services, but it's not within the guidelines.
Okay, so moving down to
What point two already?
Yeah, this is where we took out all the old language and have added following project type, simplifies with full review. And then exceptions for cisterns, solar panels. And then this is where it talks about minor review. If you go just a little. Oh, sorry. More? No, that's fine. Yeah. Minor review. Generally for projects that don't require permits. Are there times when there are minor reviews where they do require permits?
Yeah, there are some.
Emergency repair. So this is also just to clarify, how much can you do? How much can you do if you're repairing it with exact materials, duplicating exact materials?
Mm-hmm.
The emergency repairs, change of sign. This is all straight from code, I think.
Okay, great.
Yeah, and once and for all, we're clear that a wall or a fence is a structure and should go through a full review, just in case there's any confusion about that.
It's a minor.
They are a structure, and all structures should go through the major review process.
A minor review under 6 feet is
true.
We do a minor review if it's under 6 feet.
But we're taking the opportunity to...
Because you can also, we can also request them.
Okay.
Right.
Then I can.
The board could request it.
I'd just like to see this clarified once and for all. A structure has been defined in this document. Walls and fences clearly fall within the bounds of that definition. So understanding them as major reviews, they're a huge issue in historic zones. They impact neighbors and the public. They're to me, understanding that any walls that are going up in this district or barriers that are blocking the buildings should go through a major review process and clarify. This is a great opportunity to clarify that.
So can I ask a question? This is related to what you talked about as far as what falls under minor versus major versus the courtesy review. Is there an avenue for something like a pre-submission inquiry? So like in academia, when you want to submit a paper to a big journal, you send them a pre-submission inquiry with the abstract and some information about what you're going to publish, right? Mm-hmm. And basically it gives them the opportunity to say, oh yes, this is something that our journal would be interested in, or not at all, go to the next guy, here's some feedback, right? So in this instance though, if someone's applying for a fence, right, and they want to know sort of what they're up against, right? What's going to happen as far as courtesy? What's going to happen as far as, is it a minor? Is it a major? If they just want to get some basic information, right? So they can send a letter to the board can send a letter back, that kind of thing, and say, here's what you'll need going forward.
Yeah, so we do have what we call our CERC or pre-application review. So you would be able to, if you were planning on a project or whatever, you can come in and actually have a full review where you have different sections reviewed, say zoning, building, historic review if it's in an HBC. So you'd be able to get all of those comments early on in the process before you submit them. So yeah, you can do that.
The board is not necessarily aware of that.
That's what I was trying to do, the board. How do we be looped into that process?
Well, what you can do at that point was also, we could recommend a courtesy review or something of that sort as well as you move through the process. Or we can clarify kind of what level of detail you need for the courtesy. But a lot of times people come in and they don't realize that they have to go through that process. They come to us and then that's when we want to tell them that they're in an HBZ, you have to go through this process. This is what your process is, but it has to meet the standards. And a lot of times they have to either design or they go back and make changes.
And so I'm looking for the definition of structure there. And you said it was here, right?
Yes, it's in a footnote from when it first gets mentioned, and I'm highlighting it on the screen now. And to that effect, while we're on this topic, it's clear to me that a pool is a structure. It's a physical element having a fixed location at, above, or below grade. So once and for all, this board, I think, should be reviewing all pool installations as major reviews.
And it could be included here.
So there is a determination from our zoning administrator that basically says that a pool is not a structure. It is not, it's something that we're looking at potentially changing, but as it is right now, a pool is not considered a structure within unified development.
How can that be? It's in conflict with the definition provided there. By the code. It says at, below, or above grade, fixed physical element
so
in place.
I believe the interpretation was it has a fixed location. Yeah, what is it? It's attached to another physical element having fixed location. So
what's it attached to? The rebar?
So what that's talking about is actually being like anchored in the ground, not necessarily something that exists underground. And that was the interpretation.
Very creative.
I'm just saying, like this is it is something that has been longstanding with the city. It was made by several zoning administrators previously. Again, as we said in our notes here, it is also something that we have been looking at potentially making changes to. So it is right now, that's us.
If they need walls and fences, they gotta have fences around the pool.
Yeah, well, that's so but that's but that's what ends up happening.
If a new wall or mm-hmm. new fence is needed yeah. for that pool, then it must come back here. Because that's
but not walls don't always get built in order to accommodate pools. They can go inside walls, existing walled spaces. Is there a way for this board to request that pools go through a review process, or does the code not provide for that full review of pools?
It would conflict with the Unified Development Code, so you wouldn't be able to do so. So that's, I mean, you can make a recommendation to make that change.
Our recommendation is that the definition of structure be taken at face value. That's my personal recommendation. I'm not speaking for the board.
And I would like to be sure that it goes in here, that line where it says are not limited to buildings, paved areas, walls and fences, comma, walls and fences for pools, posts, and pillars.
So the problem with doing that would be that that's not the definition of structure in the Unified Development Code because you're referencing
fences are.
Just adding in the pools portion isn't actually that definition.
This is a direct definition cut and paste from the code.
I understand. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So even if a pool is not a structure, I'm assuming it still falls under the purview of
structure. Not according to the city is what we're hearing. They're saying that because there's no grounds for understanding a pool as a structure, that it does not, we cannot require pools to go through a major review. Because of a very creative interpretation of the definition of structure.
So, I mean, what about hardscaping, stuff like that?
They're not fixed elements, mm-hmm. like a gravel drive.
Actually, that's it's under landscape. Hardscape and landscape is removed.
Oh yeah, I guess so. Mm-hmm.
Okay, moving on to full review. Let's scroll down through that. And these are just the where a full review would be done. Minor review, classification. So five classifications. This is from the existing design guidelines with the removal of the reference to the code. this next paragraph right there, the one you just highlighted, within this preservation zone, new construction alterations to a contributing non-historic or contributing or non-contributing will reflect the architectural style and be compatible with and compared with contributing historic properties located in the development. So that was one of the issues we had in the last 2 years, is that a contributing non-historic property was only compared to contributing non-historic properties when it had a contributing historic property next door. So that's the reason for this change.
This is the big take home here.
Nicely written.
The next piece that's fixed. That's just a typo there.
Is the city able to assist us with any graphics around these multiple types of properties to kind of show, like, do a little flow chart or a visualization? All those primary.
I think there are some like maps and different things that could help with some of this. We don't really have a ton of kind of in-house graphic abilities, but we definitely want to help like as much as we can with this. So as far as just graphics and making sure that it's understandable. So I think I'm sure there's some ways that we can help out with that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, the next section is development zone. And all of the information in italics is directly from the code.
Right. All right, Lane, am I in the place you want me to be here?
Yes.
5.1.
Yeah. Go okay. A little bit from that, because that italicized section is straight from the code. Right.
This is the code.
Okay. And it talks about blocks and lots and what creates the historic zone boundary, or that what creates the development zone within the historic zone. But then in the same code, it has this language about Fort Lowell being different, right? But the problem we had in the last 2 years is it wasn't treated differently.
I'm so sorry, I didn't mean to click that. I apologize.
Nope, don't go in there. Let's go back to the document. Page 6. Right there. So the language for Fort Lowell, which I didn't think I could remember. But I'm going to go back and put the language for Fort Lowell because you see the map, right? The map, that little map is in the code. So even though it says, here's how you define a development zone and historic zone. But Fort Lowell's different. Fort Lowell's organic. It has, you know, contrast in the development zones, semi-rural, organic, incremental development, is illustrated. So we're struggling with this, and we need help.
Yeah.
Because we've really run around the block a lot about this.
Yeah.
So I don't know how to address it.
And we'd like to highlight that this entire code falls under a purpose and intent, all of it, which is to preserve the character of the neighborhoods that have the zoning. So our goal is for these guidelines to be working with that intent.
Oh, yeah. No, and I think we understand that. I think the problem is when you have regulatory document like the Unified Development Code, it really can't be in conflict with that. So again, if that second portion of that really doesn't align necessarily with the original, with the definition of development zone, it's different from that. And if it's different from what's in the Unified Development Code, it can't be that way. So that's where we're running into some problems, is just where there's conflict between the development code and what's in the guidelines when you're going to, you know, kind of have a different standard that's in guidelines when they're just guidelines, they're not necessarily like the code.
So 5.1 exists in the development code with this map.
Mm-hmm.
So it's presently in the code.
The map, yeah.
And the map is kind of conveying these private roadways.
So I'm confused as to why
they're drawn into this map.
Yeah. I'm confused then why they wouldn't be used.
Because it's confusing to the board and all of the neighbors. Yeah.
So, because of the present and there, and it's not just our document.
it's any code.
I think I have to go back and put that back in. So I think what we'd like to do is have a determination, but
okay,
an intelligent determination that we're aware of with transparency. Because what happened before was a determination was made, we weren't aware of it, and it came back to us as, you know, no, this is the way it is. And then that determination changed.
It ended up changed, and that was
confusing. No, that's understandable. When you have, you know, one determination and it changes and shifts and things like that.
Right.
So totally agree with you. Happy to sit down and make sure that we give you something in writing related to what, you know, the determination related to that and kind of how we can move forward.
Right. So then my question is, how do we do that? Because I want to do it properly.
Yeah.
Do we make a formal request?
You can either do a formal request or I can just have our zoning administrator do a determination on how that.
Well, would the zoning administrator
so there they
be
are,
making
yeah.
a determination without input from us, though?
Yeah, so they're the arbiter of the code. So they're the ones who can make kind of, they're the ones who interpret the code.
So I guess we're not trying to interpret the code, though. We're trying to understand that this private street is a street. Are we not in agreement that it's a private roadway?
I think that conflicts with the definition within the Unified Development Code.
It's right here on the document, actually. A street is a permanent or public or private right-of-way other than an alley or an access lane or parking area set aside to accommodate vehicular traffic.
So I haven't seen the determination. I have a feeling it has to do with the access lane portion.
We haven't seen it either.
Okay. Well, I can provide that.
No, I mean... What we'd like to do is like outline this section, discuss it, talk through it, and then actually make a formal request based on what we understand it to be that we haven't been able to convey very successfully.
And also,
because it's not that private street's not a drive. And it's been said, oh, it's a private drive. It's not a private drive. There are 10 homes on a private private easement. So anyway,
it is all neighbor owned.
And well, from our perspective, as that determination is being put together, looking at these graphics that are provided for the general guidelines for citywide for development zone, we can see clearly that the intent of a development zone is to create a hyper niche context within a historic zone, and whether that's getting achieved by the current functions in Fort Lowell or not. And whether that's really within the code. So that would be my request to take that into consideration, that when you look at these maps that are provided to understand what a development zone is, you can see that it's hyper niche and really not that many properties should be involved in the conversation. There, in fact, there is no example that provides more than 6 or 7 comparison properties.
And ours was
the whole development zone that is considered. The whole historic district is considered one development zone. It's problematic for creating those hyper niche contexts that maintain the historic fabric of this neighborhood.
So we'll work on that.
Well, are we asking Dan to go ahead and take it to?
Not yet. I think we need to look at it again. Look at the code. Look at what we have here. Get a definition of a private road. Get a definition of a water course, because that's another conversation about whether a wash is like a mesquite wash is a water course.
Yes, water course is not defined in the code, but fortunately FEMA provides a definition. That's where I took my definition when I was trying to understand what a water course is, as mentioned in the code. Definition of a block.
And that's kind of, I think that's kind of stretching it, because what we're doing is we're just trying to make it work, you know, so that it's meaningful.
Okay,
so why don't you go ahead. We're going to have your mission.
You want to do new construction here?
Well, the next section starts to talk about improvements, right? Just more details on what improvements are. And it's pretty non-controversial, I think. The only thing that was kind of controversial was D, about curbs and sidewalks. And so, yes, the historic zones have to meet the requirements for transportation and safety and all that kind of stuff. Our neighborhood plan, our Old Portland neighborhood plan specifically calls out that concrete sidewalks and curbs are lovely. So, and that's not just the historic zone, that's the neighborhood plan. So I think that we have to figure out a way to develop language that accommodates the code, but also accomplishes that for people. And people don't know. I mean, they're usually pretty happy not to put in curbs and sidewalks, developers. Maybe.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, generally. I think we need to, because it does conflict. And the neighborhood plan is, even though it says that, those are usually used for rezonings, the inflexible lot development, something like that. So it doesn't always necessarily make its way into the review process.
Right.
But in this instance, I think that Gasoline suggested it should.
And just, it's not a requirement of the Unified Development Code to do so. So if it's required by the UDC, that would make sense. We just wouldn't be able to, you know, utilize it because it doesn't reference it. It's not right. So, I mean, we can look at ways. I would have to check and see if there's ways to waive that. And maybe that's something to where it's encouraged through the review, and then they have to go to the Department of Transportation Mobility and get raised.
Yeah.
Like, we can look at a way to potentially do that, but we just need to be aware that it's a conflict with current site development standards. So it's something we just need to see if it's on route.
And they also referenced in there that Pima County, so the annexation terms that came in, the terms of the HPZ that came in with the annexation, that's what it references. And it says, the same, it says the same thing. Yeah. So by
oh, you know, it's interesting. Yeah.
Thank you.
That's, really, that's helpful. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
really, that might be the,
because there are, I mean, like, a lot of times there's zoning conditions that come through with annexations, et cetera, right, that are above and beyond or different from what we have with our code.
Right.
And if you have something like that, it does help.
Yeah.
So you could potentially, you know, as long as that's, you know, apparent in the review, which maybe it hasn't been, but we'll look at that. That's helpful. Thank you.
And Lane, I have to ask, did the development zone come up from the county side?
I can't remember. I'd have to go back and look.
Because that might be an interesting
strategy
or a way to make
good idea,
good consideration.
Great idea.
Parking, that next piece Margo's asking about, what are the highlighted things? This is just straight from the technical standard.
Okay.
I'm highlighted so that we could look at them in that light. So again, that again requires all those parking elements. And this will only come up in, like, at the park, right?
We talked about it last meeting.
Yeah. About curb stops and surfacing and screening and things like that. So we need to find a way to incorporate that for the public properties.
Well, these definitions here, at least the parking, kind of goes against what they're planning to do at the commissary.
Because of the rear of the development's not going to be at the rear.
That's right.
It's going to be seen in the right of way.
Mm-hmm.
No screening. I mean, it's, yeah, completely in contrast.
The next one about garages. garages and carports right in the middle of that. Garages and carports should be detached from primary buildings. So the question, the comment from the city was, what's the basis for this? There are really only two garages, and they're both separated from the structure, from the house.
That are original to the historic zone.
That are historic, contributing historic.
Yeah.
There are several contributing historic with carports that are attached. So that probably, but there are a bunch more that where the carports are detached. So
the carports are detached.
So this is about what's the recommendation going to be in the future. So think about that. Carports may not be in front of the primary facade. So again, there are exceptions to that too. And even recent exceptions to it, where it was okay, because that was the only place for they were. Mike they were Bell. Mike Bell, Alan Scott, yeah, those guys. The next one about single family dwellings. That's probably not very well written in this context of our HPC. It's pulled from Winston University, but the idea is. What you see mostly here, and needs to be written, is mostly one-story single-family residences.
Mm-hmm.
The exception to that was the commissary, and it's not there. It's not an apartment complex anymore. Landscaping. Informal landscaping, it's all pretty straightforward, pretty well known by this board. Design all sides, that was a comment because we had focused, the previous guidelines had focused on the fronts, on the streetscape, but the comments were all sides have to be designed. Secondary buildings, we still need to clarify what's going to happen with ADUs in historic zones. I think. Mm-hmm. Has there been any more discussion or presentation?
So basically, I mean, state law kind of limits us on what we can do as far as regulations. So we have to adhere to state law when making those changes. The way we interpret the law is that the historic design review still. It still applies. It still has to go through design review. There are a handful of kind of minor things in the bill that probably limit that design review a little bit. One's related to just like building type, right? And so you can't require the building to exactly mimic the primary structure.
True.
So, which is not really super in conflict. You can look at the development zone, and that's totally fine. Building height's kind of the same way, to where you have to have the same standards as what would be required for a single family home.
Okay.
In previous situations, you would compare it to other accessory structures. Now you'd have to compare it to probably all the principal structures within the development zone. I don't think that's a huge issue here because there's not a ton of building height that's much different than some of your accessory structures. It might add a little bit, but again, that it's like little things like that, but it still has to go through design review.
And quick clarity, is there still a height for ADUs in general that they can't be taller than the primary?
No, so the bill basically says it has to be the height that's allowed the single family homes in the zone.
Okay, but
so
I see.
So it's basically in most places, not here because you still have to go through the design review, it would be probably about 25.
So here there's nothing much. So my main question about this is as these design review guidelines get reviewed, with the future guidelines that address ADUs, they just have to be, they can't be in conflict with the now state law.
That's right.
So, but otherwise, we can still put in the same kind of parameters that we have before.
Yeah, I think so. You should be able to, it should be, I mean, other than those few things, that it limits in the state law, everything else is.
And how many units, how many ADUs can be built given what's, my understanding was you can increase the density on your property minus zone for two, I could go to three ADUs and now I have four units.
So you can do, it's two units per lot with an option of a third unit if it's restricted, deed restricted affordable housing. And you have to be over an acre in order to get that third unit. So you have, your lot has to be over. But that's state law.
Is there anything that defines the difference between an ADU and an addition?
Yeah, I mean, kind of.
We just covered one 2 weeks ago where there was an addition with a kitchenette. And Briggs said that's an ADU.
A lot of it has to do with separate access too. So if it's a standalone unit, like you can have an addition that's just basically an attached ADU. Right. So, but if it's connected, it would just be a second kitchen.
That's what I was thinking, is that if they're,
that's what
you're accessing it from the house, even if it has a separate entrance.
Yeah.
But you can still get to it from the main house.
Yeah, I don't think that would be, I think that would be an addition.
I don't want to have this discussion about the nuances of the ADU code, so I'm
going to hold on. I know that they've done some training on
Janet Cox, her addition. The kitchenette. Anyway, let's move on. And number F there, I'm going to take out, I think, about the, that was something that was in the West University Code that I'm going to take out. Secondary building that's wider than one lot. I don't know that we would ever have that.
Well, Bailey's, Josh and Danny, they're on two lots.
This idea is addressed in Rhythm and Form. The other parts of the design guidelines go into detail about what breakup height and surface means.
I don't know. I'm just going to take it out. Okay. And if we have trouble, then we'll come back to you. Okay. Demolition, this is the section that talks specifically about demolition. So it mostly just explains.
Maybe to address that earlier concern, this can just be moved up into that processes and then not revisited a second time in the document. It's like a footnote to the, like where you were talking about, Daniel, about wanting that up there.
At least make some mention of C section.
Yeah, we can put the section there. It just says C information. And then the next sections are section seven is all the specific criteria, the design criteria. So where you see the black text there, it's all the same as it was, with a few minor additions. And then this part about height and proportion. We did leave in, this is another thing that we may have to get a determination on, because there were specific heights, right? That, depending on which side of the road you're on, and we've talked about this so many times, I don't ever want to talk about it again in my life. About why it was that way. And then this was another comment from the city that we can't exclude the post-trader store as a height. So we tried to modify that language so that what you're saying is, the post-trader store is not like anything else.
Well, the code seems to have this utilization of the word typical, and that for us, the post-grader store is an atypical, singularly unique structure in Fort Lowell. And it's not a typical structure, nor is the chapel a typical structure. While we do have a whole bunch of typical structures to be available in instances that people want to compare to the Post Trader store anyway, it still does not convey a typical height in the neighborhood. It's an extraordinary height. And the code to us, it seems that we're allowed to encourage a typical height from the development zone language. So that's kind of what we were coming at. And we're not that it should be excluded, but that it should be seen as extra special.
Well, the same with the chapel. We didn't address the chapel.
So I don't think we so you can't exclude we don't have any other design guidelines or any other parts of our code that allows to, for you like exclude it as a part of that analysis. I think maybe some sort of clarification in the language, just talking about that. I will say that the review is meant to really look at the context of it as well. I mean, this goes back to that conversation where I think we were dealing with what is it, the parking lot that's across the street from the school down in Barrio Viejo, that's three stories or whatever it is, and how while you reference, you may be able to reference, you take into account the entire development zone, but then you look at the type of use there, and it's not appropriate to have the type of bulk that you would have with the school across the street. So you are able to kind of analyze the whole area as, in its context. So I excluding it really is something that,
We're not excluding it. We
okay.
just want to call it out as atypical, which is different than an exclusion, that it should be seen as something extra and special that is not a typical structure or height in our neighborhood, and people should take that into consideration. It should still be used for design influences in many instances, but its height and everything about its massing and proportion is atypical.
Is there a way to say it, sort of coming from the other perspective, which is height and massing should be within, I mean, I'm thinking like science, but within X standard deviations of the average height and massing, right? It ought to be, is there some
Well,
way to say that, you know?
that's kind of where the, it's like, what is a typical height? It certainly, to me, it isn't the highest you can go according to the highest building in your development zone. However, the city did provide that information in our training when we went to the city's complex that, yes, that's how they are behaving, that there's a precedent that height can be reflective of the highest building in the development zone, not the typical height. So it what This is what was stated at the city training, and how the city has been behaving is different than what my reading of the code was with the typical height topic.
Let me phrase that a different way. So when you say typical, right, you're saying what is most common, right? So if there is an, I guess what I'm wondering is like, let's say we figured out what the average height of structures in, each zone,
That'd
right?
be great methodology for applicants to pursue. That's a
So
great way for them to think about how to
what I'm thinking
design.
is, can we put some language in here that says, okay, the average height of each of our development zones is this,
Well,
right?
that's.
Please stay within these,
Yeah.
stick around these measurements.
And that's
So
kind of what that other yellow section above says. We can support by providing a list of contributing historic property heights. So we know what they are because we
yeah,
measured
that's what I'm
them.
saying. Yeah.
This is an instance in
No,
which it would be great for applicants to come talk before they hire a designer.
I will say you just have to make sure you're not conflicting with what the definition of development zone is, what it allows currently.
The
So,
typical height within a
okay.
development zone came directly from the code. That is
No,
directly from the code.
I totally agree with that. I'm more saying just like the calculation of the average height was very specific. And that's regulatory, not necessarily a guideline. Yeah. So just have to be careful.
The calculation of the average height.
Like I think the language just says the typical height within the development zone is calculated by taking an average height of all contributing historic properties within the approved development zone.
That's been taken.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We heard you last time.
No, I appreciate it.
We're trying.
No,
we want to get it moved forward.
Well, and I really appreciate the amount of work and time you guys have. So, I mean, I know it's because you care about the neighborhood, you care about your area. And making sure that the development is appropriate. So I totally understand that.
Thank you.
Rhythm, pattern, ropes, those things are changed a little bit. For walls, we added the rounded, softly rounded roofs, corrugated mill, standing seam, other materials. Changed that too based on comments on low slope roofs. I think I don't remember what it was, but we changed it. Basically, it said we'll look at it case by case.
Sorry, I'm taking a personal note, and that always messes up when I'm on the screen share too. Oops.
I think for these other things here, I think y'all should just read through these and see if you agree or if something should be made more clear.
And the blue is new?
Yes.
Okay. So it's nice to do this. David and Margo, how you doing?
Fine.
Laborious, but I really think we'd do better as a group listening and doing it. So if you don't mind continuing, are you done?
No, I'm just watching the time. It's 7:15.
Do you want me to take over for a little bit? I can just push down these real fast.
I'm okay with that. You guys are okay.
Yeah, I'd like to continue. Is that okay with you both?
Only 4 pages to go.
Yeah, they're gone. Just 4 pages left.
Most of these changes in mechanical things and we're going to talk about them.
Yes.
Skylights, solar panels, satellite dishes. There was a comment about it conflicted with SHPO's direction that solar panels could be visual, so it could be seen. So what we did was we just toned it down and said, should we put in locations that minimize visual effects? And then there was some detail, I think, in the code that this came from. Panels installed flat, or whether that came from SU or something.
I don't see how you can make someone ground mount panels if they don't have the space and they want to do rooftop.
It's a challenge.
Hopefully the materials will get better over time.
Okay.
The next section, texture and color, there's quite a bit of detail about stucco and when or when not to use cement stucco. It's probably more detail than needs to be in here, but I think we could put that into a different document, like a policy, not a policy document, but an advisory document.
I don't know. I like it in here because, if they're reviewing the guidelines, you've got it right there.
Yeah, one-stop shopping.
I'm okay with detailing it, too. I think it's once and for all important to have the consolidated resource.
Makes it easier.
And here's the brick item.
The old bricks. Mm-hmm.
Shall I continue?
Mm-hmm. Windows are something else we should talk about. So the black text there was the existing text. We broadened it a little bit because you know, just to say that not only are there a lot of different kinds of windows, but like steel casement windows are common here. Mm-hmm. Historically they were wood casement windows, like in my house. But this question about, particularly about vinyl clad windows, no, not acceptable, but aluminum clad windows, other historic zones are starting to accept. And the question about whether you can use fake muttons, you know, a slip you see. And
I know we did a change to design guidelines for West University probably 7 or 8 years ago to allow for the clad windows, partially just because the wood was just not.
Excuse me.
And some of them look pretty good. And then other ones not.
Other ones
so,
not.
I mean, they basically, I think there was some language in there, and we can share the language with you that actually spoke to that, to where it's like, it still needs to meet the design, the principles and things of that sort, but it does allow it in certain circumstances. I mean, I think that might be a way forward if you wanted to do that.
I just feel it's a very vague, open term. And yeah, it would just need to be much more deeply specified if we were going to consider allowing contemporary materials. And I don't see why we can't just continue with wood windows in the neighborhood. I don't see why we shouldn't just continue with wood.
You can't get them. I mean, you can certainly get modern ones, but a lot of times you can't get the historic. You have them built.
Correct. Yeah. That's what it means to own a historic home in a historic district.
Well, what do you do? Does this refer to new construction then? Because new construction may not have full windows. I mean, that's been allowed it's been allowed.
I think that our design guidelines should be very careful about opening up the criteria for the fenestrations. The Secretary of Interior Standards specifies that windows are one of the most important elements of the exteriors of the buildings. So I think we should revisit this to make sure that we're really thoughtfully bounding any additional materials that are allowed. Aluminum is a very broad term. To say aluminum window, that is an extremely broad term. So I think maybe more in line with like the stucco section that really if we're going to allow contemporary materials, that really specify what the visual outcome of that's going to be.
I have seen some nice reproduction windows.
I have great clad windows at my house too, but not the Fort Lowell house.
Yeah.
There's beautiful looking ones out there, but it's just really important to specify because we don't want like a whole bunch of Anderson Renewal windows in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the biggest marketers.
Well, so maybe you can would you take that on as a...
I'll try.
Sure.
I'll try.
And do some research on windows, and if you'll send us the language from...
I will try.
I'll share the West University language. And I have some documentation, I think, from the conversation. SHPO and some of it.
Okay.
So that'd be great. Yeah, if there's a higher, that's like almost too policy. There's an intent behind it, right?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Well, I think the historic homes are different than those that are not historic.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not described here. So that may be part of it that we get some difference on that.
Okay, the other addition here is gates, security doors, window grates, which are another thing that are added that oftentimes people don't come for review for. They don't know that they're supposed to.
Maybe we should just state again, should come to review.
Elements, side elements, landscape. It's just a little more... descriptive about the native, to try to keep it native desert as much as possible in this semi-rural district. And it also recommends using the spice books, the plantings in public field.
I have a question about Barry Spicer's resource. This plant list, how long is it?
It's pretty long.
Like, is it like a 15-page document, or could it be like an appendix to this? Yeah, because we're continuously asking people to use it, yet it's not easily accessible because it's currently hard to communicate with the board as you're going into designs. And to me, or select up one page appendices, and then from there, say additional plant. Our plantings are available if you want to go deeper in your landscaping.
I don't think it's that long. I think it might be, for the list of plants, it might only be 2 pages. There are a lot of illustrations in it, but I don't believe the list is that terribly long.
I'll give you a copy.
Okay, yeah, I would like
we have like 2,000 copies of this book.
We have.
But
I think it's a good point that I should have a species list at the end of this. And you know, as Barbara was saying, it's, you could probably do 2 columns and it'd be a page.
Yeah, and we're regularly bringing it up at board meetings and referring to it. It should be available in our guidelines as a primary resource.
Okay. We're trying to sell it too.
Yeah.
Oh, we are.
Well, you could cite it in this document, but having just the species listed is, you know, there's no reason, there's no copyright infringement just to list species that are native, right? Like, which, I mean, you cite the book.
Okay. So keep that on in a to be decided list. Enclosures, this talks about walls and fences. So there were some additions, and we've already passed this policy as a board last year about adding these other types of fences and restricting things like corrugated metal.
Sorry.
And that one I've got right here. That.
Apologies.
And then it also, that second paragraph pulls it from the code that says should not be more than 4 feet measured from the street side.
So both of these sections kind of go back to what I agree, just what's the purview of our, right, is it, I mean, it's when does someone need to get a review for landscaping, fences, minor review, major review, all that stuff, right?
When there's a structural change.
That all that is covered in the top of the document, and then this section of the document is actually the design, like for the what you're actually building, the design suggestions for what you're building.
Yeah, I understand that.
Okay.
So if a structural, so in other words, somebody who's just changing landscape will get a review. That's my opinion.
Yes, they would. If they're just changing landscape,
yeah,
if you're going to add trees, you're going to take trees out, absolutely, is that landscaping?
So then that's a structural change, according to that?
I don't know if it's structural, but...
That's what I mean.
Landscaping is minor review, is my understanding. I have to, every time I have to reference the primary documents. I haven't memorized this material.
Oh, it is minor review. It is, but it's a review.
Right. So this is why I'm asking, is because it seems like if there's any structural change, seems to be that's when you start the review, right? That's when you get to review.
The big review process, you mean?
To any review.
Oh.
Right. So I'm saying minor or major review, or minor or full review. Right. Any structural change.
I have to get up, bring it up the document.
So this is where I'm confused.
Applicability. Okay. Yeah. Here we are.
And does the landscaping apply to just to the entire area, like in front as well as in back of the house, for a review?
Well, look. So if you look at the, I don't know, the one UDC development, it says clearing, grubbing, grading. that those are components that, but it's not just specific to the UDC. It is the, I get track confused. Okay. I thought UDC was that house. So, the additional house.
No, no,
okay.
It's ADU.
ADU, sorry.
Don't worry, you're doing
that right. Yeah, my triple.
This stuff.
But anyway, but that is.
So scrolling to.
That's part
so,
of it.
So the first part here is saying all properties in this zone are subject to this type of thinking.
Right.
And then it goes on to discuss whether you're doing a new construction or an alteration. And then it talks about these exterior landscapes. These are all pervy to the conversation of the historic being in a historic zone, accessory buildings and structures. And then in the process, it goes down to break down where the full review and the partial review occur. So down here in the minor review.
So this brings me back to the pools thing, which is like, so it sounds so, like we do your our preview is more than just structures, yeah. Right? So pools, we still could include, it's just not called a structure. Is that right?
If they have to take out trees.
Versus new
construction.
Oh, sorry.
Land. They have to change the grading, grubbing, all that.
Is it up higher? Sorry, it's I don't have a real document. I just
it's really I mean it's really there. Yeah.
I need to clarify what the applicability is within the UDC, because from there that's where you kind of get your.
The other side of this coin is if somebody wants to plant a shrub in front of their house, one shrub. Right. Then they got to come for review.
No.
So it's not
a destruction. Yeah.
But it's not destruction. It's landscapes to do.
It's implied in other parts of the code that landscaping conversation comes into play when there's a large scale context coming up. So like the commissary, we spoke about landscaping.
Yeah.
Or at these major home reviews, we're talking about them.
So that's a side or an accessory component to a structural change.
It's part of a whole development plan for a property. When they're bringing a development plan, it comes with a landscaping plan. When there's especially when there's a fully complex project.
I guess the reason I bring this up is because like the language to be clear. About, you know, okay, where's the line drawn and how much landscaping do I need to be doing to come to how much does it have to include a structural change or not? If somebody is, you know, completely tearing out all their trees and all their shrubs, I would hope they would come here first, right? Rather than just tear them all out and even if they are replanting native species, right?
So generally, I don't know how to answer these questions. It seems like people doing personal plantings in their yards isn't coming in conflict with the historic zone.
Right.
But that when people are making major changes to landscaping and you're just trying to get some clarity between that major and minor line.
So basically, when at what point is
gotcha. I get what you're am I saying it back to you? That
I think just basically at what point does someone read through this and go, oh man, I'm making a lot of landscape changes. I need to go for a minor review or a major, whatever, right?
Can the city provide any support on that nuance?
Yeah, I'm trying to find where this language came from.
This is from this university.
Oh. Okay, so this isn't from the UDC.
No.
Okay. That's interesting. Okay. I can definitely come back and like kind of clarify some of this because I was reading through kind of what the UDC says. And, you know, it says design review required, you know, review and approval of all properties, buildings, signs, and structures within the HPZ is required for all development improvements,
mm-hmm.
Including new construction improvements that do not require a building.
Mm-hmm.
And then you review for compliance. And then it goes through and it says specifically for, you know, full HPZ review, you know, these are the type of projects for it, and then it also talks from there. So what I can do is I can draft something up and come back.
I think this either came from our previous version, 2004.
Okay.
That enclosures, landscape, hardscape line.
Yeah,
it came from Rice University.
I think there are certain site improvements that would be reviewed, but Yeah, landscaping,
I think it's extent
not
too. I think it's
yeah.
where it's like where you where the overall impact of those
Well,
modifications.
it says here the total cost of such improvement is under, oh, minor would be
Might.
under 1500. Yeah, let's
We should adjust it for inflation.
I will,
You have
but
money.
I'm happy to come back and clarify that.
Because landscape, I mean, we do review landscape, it was in the previous guidelines. The question is, if all you're doing is a major landscape project, does that require?
I don't know. It was devastating when the Post Trader Store had its big clearing and the saguaro was taken down and the trees were all denuded and it did not go through a process. And many of these incredible historic limbs, I mean, it was hopefully the trees will recover.
Some of these trees have been around as long as the entire neighborhood.
The saguaros definitely
Saguaros.
were. Yeah. So, like, yeah, I hear what you're saying that you want to get some more specificity about requiring the review. Those people didn't want to do any reviews anyway. So,
I just want to go back to one other thing. Let's go back to enclosures and it's
All the way to the bottom.
8 or 7 o'clock.
Back down at the bottom of the end. Yeah.
Enclosures.
Okay. Enclosures show there. What we added here was that there are historic field fences in this neighborhood. So I think the code says not chain link. Something about chain link is excluded. But in fact, there are wire fences and field fences and patio fences and there's this 4 foot chain link fence that's historic.
That's common
So,
too.
it's
Yeah.
like forever.
It's just one fence.
No, it's like it's in several places, but it was put up in the 40s and 50s, early 50s. And then there's other channels.
Should we specify that the fences should be distressed and patinaed if it's going to be chain link? That could be like a design accommodation that would settle a new chain link installation should anybody choose to do that. Or something to support not getting
Painted.
galvy fresh bright that will not stay like that for decades.
Or like
You gotta bend those posts at least
or
half.
I don't know what is the steel treatment called when it is allowed to rust, not
Not
just
like Horton, like
non-galvanized.
Horton.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that type of thing. Like Horton
Yeah.
steel.
What'd you say?
Corton.
Like for certain corrugated panels do rust intentionally
Yeah.
or rusticated.
Yeah, but no corrugating.
Just so that we're not getting, it doesn't seem like many people opt that direction.
Or and it can't be chain or coated chain. It's probably another specification.
Not coated,
Yeah.
yeah. There wouldn't be any design comparisons for them.
Gates is another issue that we have. We added some other gates.
Gate design, simple gate design. Did you go to a new?
No little quails or pigeons.
Although you can draw reference from existing gates in the neighborhood, especially your development.
You want to scroll down? Sidewalks is the topic. Again, it's like concrete sidewalks are not compatible. Mailboxes, city come in and we don't review mailboxes. I think they're in here just so that people will think about mailboxes. It's really not regulated.
Yeah, I
I
think
see.
our comment was just like, yeah, related. What did we say? Okay to include. It's clear that it's something encouraged, not regulated. Yeah.
They're definitely structures.
Usually in the right of way, but yeah.
Yeah, and the rest of this is just the context references and things like that. And then I do need somebody. I think Alan Scott drew these drawings. I'm going to ask if I can do that.
I think it would be awesome to have some details of windows. So divided light casement windows is a very technical term, and just having some illustrations that show what a double hung window is, a side by side double hung, and some divided light, just so that there's a visual reference specifying the windows. I know it's in these illustrations, but they're so subtle.
I mean, is it something that we have illustrations, can we do add photos to this document? Like if there is some...
Well, this goes into the code, right? When it goes into the... Goes into technical standards.
I think it goes into technical standards. Yeah. I mean, you can definitely. There are drawings. We've had images, all kinds of stuff.
I mean, you can take pictures of a few windows and doors around the neighborhood and say these are.
Photographs could be a fine reference. Just some graphic support around this conversation. So one is a divided light casement window.
I'm just thinking it could be hard to get somebody to draw. All this stuff, whereas we could just get some photos right
now. Yeah, or graphic art, or there might be historic support documents. Maybe Damien could support us with some stuff. Yeah, or the city is able to support us.
Yeah.
We've got boards of photographs that they used to hand out show to the architects who were coming in of the doors, of the windows. I don't know where those are, but they're available.
So I'd like the next step on this to be, if you have comments on this document, to send them to me and Briggs, and we're working on a Google Doc to put the next version together.
We're happy to provide additional comments on the second draft as well.
Okay.
So if you don't mind sharing that, we'll post it and then we'll provide some additional comments as well.
Do you need to post it if we're not taking action on it?
Just because it's public, we'd like to post materials like that, just as far as wellness review, just for transparency purposes.
It's going to be in the minutes anyway?
It will be in the minutes as well.
It will be in the minutes.
This information.
Since we're having a kind of admin meeting tonight, instead of a review meeting, Corin had mentioned the possibility of supporting us with a worksheet that was different than the checklist, but was more like a document that we could fill out as we're reviewing plans. I came up a couple of meetings ago. I had also requested it at the city training and was told that it would... that they could help with that. So
I love that idea. So that's definitely something that we'd like to develop.
I'm making a resource for the board that once these guidelines are moving through, it's ready to go, but it's reorganized the information that's provided in the code and the technical standards and the guidelines. Instead of having it go all, process, applicability, and then details, just honing in on the design guideline details so that when it's time to have a conversation about height, we can reference the code, the technical standards, and our own design guidelines in one place around the height conversation or the form and rhythm conversation or these other design areas. So I've just been working to condense this resource. I don't know how I can share it in its almost current form with just the Unified Development Code and technical standards, but it's really not complete without the guidelines being there to bring that final specificity. But I'm excited to release this resource as these guidelines finish wrapping up.
Awesome. Anybody have anything else? Anything for next month's agenda that you wanted to be sure? We do need at some point to vote on the lane, but I think probably you in November to get back on the board. To get probably on the board. So, but I know we need to nominate her probably in November so that she can be active in January again. Right. Not that she's not active. Still, she can.
I have one other question. Is there an anticipation of more plans coming next month? Or right now, is the pipeline just free and clear?
I don't know of anything right now that's come in, so.
We're waiting on a minor review from Tim Allen, which is the Tom Allen,
okay.
Which is the second house. So
oh yeah, okay.
We'll see.
I haven't seen it, no, but I Wyatt had mentioned it to me.
Because I
was struggling with the other.
Okay.
Well, no, well, he wondered, he said he's completed it. And
did he?
And I haven't gotten word on anything, so I left a message for Michael.
Did you? Okay. I'll check with Michael and Wyatt and see where it's at.
Because, because I don't need to be the one to go to that review, but we can have two. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay, and before we adjourn, is it possible for me to bring up one other process challenge?
Sure.
Okay, when looking at most of the design plans that have been coming are totally adequate to look on a computer screen or print out and read on. However, when applicants such as Porky Coaster and Drew or the City of Tucson for Fort Lowell Park are coming, and they are actually submitting architectural scale drawings that that are supposed to be printed on large format paper and are designed to flip through, those plans are not possible to interpret in an 11-inch computer screen. You cannot actually manage these documents and zoom in. So I wanted to put a request forward that in the instances where we're reviewing large-scale architectural drawings, that it would be appropriate for the city to do printouts, and
the architect,
or the architect. But
Gregory spoke of it.
Yeah, it's very hard to prepare for those meetings because the print on the documents is this small, and there's no way to read the document linearly because you zoom in, and it's a really huge process breakdown in terms of trying to come as prepared as possible to be efficient with the applicants and to honor all of the work and more money that they've put into their design process.
No, thanks. I appreciate that. Let me bring that back and kind of think of a way that we can kind of get at that. I don't know if we have the ability to print off those plan sets at the office.
Different solution.
But yeah, but I think that's something we should definitely like think about how we can make that easier for you to review those. I totally get it. Like if you look at it like full screen, what do you think? It's really challenging to get an understanding of really the whole thing at once, right?
Very hard. And I don't know if it calls for that applicant packet to evolve with the digital formatting that's happening now or whatever. Yeah. But thank you for hearing that one last grievance.
Please adjourn us, somebody.
You can adjourn.
I can adjourn us.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I need to
thank
go.
You, Margo. Thank you, David.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thanks,
thank
everyone.
You.
Thank you, everybody in the room.
Thank you.